Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Wednesday night edition of the Fight Network Sports Conversation. I'm Don Henderson. Roy Cummings is in Tampa, Florida, ready to talk about what's happening in Tampa. And, of course, Roger Henry, as always, is in Atlanta, Georgia, with the champions are playing big-time baseball right now, as well as we get ready for the National Football League season. At the controls, and our executive producer, as always, is Frank Carroll. And Frank has a little bit of an announcement for a show later in the week I know he wants to touch on. So let me get it right over to Frank Carroll first.
Thanks, Don. Yeah, we have another program on Saturday nights. It's strictly boxing. It's called Fighting Words. And what we have on there is some very talented staff. But added to our staff as of this week is a young man who is a retired boxer. He's won five championships belts. He is the co-owner of Golden Boy Productions with Oscar De La Hoya, and that's my good friend Bernard Hopkins. So Bernard will be joining us every week. He'll have his fighters on, so if anyone is available on Saturday evenings, 7:30 to 8:30. Please listen. We also want to thank all our listeners out there. We have surpassed 386,000 worldwide listeners. That's an uptick of over 26,000 listeners this year. And we everybody at the station here appreciates each and every one of you, and thank you very much for listening. It's the hard work of this group here that keeps this station going. So I wanted to thank them. And the last thing is, this weekend is a very important weekend. We're going to honor the people that labor so hard each and every day to try and keep everybody going and everybody happy. Please don't destroy it by going out and drinking and driving. I can tell you that this weekend there will be roving patrols out with extra men on duty, men and women on duty, just for DUIs. So please, it's a $10,000 call, no matter how you do it, $3,000 or $4,000 for your lawyer, $1,000 for the court, and the rest is the money that you're going to lose because it's $60 a month to probation for 6 months, and then you have to take a driver's school, and besides that, you have to take a test at the end to see if you're eligible to drive to get your license back. So don't lose your license for 6 months. BPOs are very hard to come by anymore, business purposes only. So please, we want each and every one of you to have a very safe and happy holiday. We thank you very much for all that you do to keep everybody going. And we hope to have you back here again next week.
Frank, thank you very much. You keep it all together, and we appreciate that. Let's go to Roy Cummings in Tampa right off the bat. The exhibition season is over. The countdown of elimination of players to 53 has also been completed yesterday. Roy Cummings, two things. First of all, an update on your quarterback, Tom Brady. Did anybody ever find out where he went? And number two, were you surprised by the cutback? And what do you think of the series and a little bit that he played in the final exhibition game?
Yeah, well, I'll start with we'll go through the Brady stuff, because there weren't a lot of surprises with the cuts. I think the biggest surprise in Tampa was that Tyler Johnson, a wide receiver who's been of some help to this team over the last couple of years, was let go. But they're very deep at the position, and this is a guy who does not really bring much. In fact, he brings nothing in terms of special teams. So he was let go, picked up by Houston. The Bucs could end up feeling the pinch on that one. I mean, you know, let's face it, Julio Jones has dealt with some injuries. Mike Evans seems to deal with injuries every year at some point, usually a hamstring problem. He'll miss a game or two here and there possibly because of that. He already has missed some time in training camp. And, you know, Chris Godwin's not back yet. So a guy like Tyler Johnson could prove quite valuable to this team going forward. But he's in Houston now, so we'll see where it goes. But that was really the biggest surprise in terms of cuts with the Bucs. Certainly there were surprises elsewhere. Sony Michel getting let go, and you know he's been picked up as well. A couple there in Philadelphia as well. But Tom Brady, no, we still don't know where he was. We still don't really know what he was doing. I'm not sure we ever will. Something tells me that at some point somebody will find out. But at the end of the day, you know, he was gone for 11 days. The Bucs passed it off as if it meant nothing. You know, for one series, you know, against, you know, Tennessee last week, he looked, one Tennessee, again, you know, he looked all right. You know, he looked fine, and we'll see how he looks, you know, coming up in 10 days. And, you know, I have no reason to believe that he's going to be, you know, he's going to look any worse for the wear for missing 10 days of training camp. It's just still kind of odd that a guy like Tom Brady, who's so committed to the team and so committed to, you know, the practice format and scheduling and that kind of thing, you know, would skip this time at this time of that much time at this time of the year. It just seems very odd to me. You know, the big question with the Bucs is still, you know, can they protect Tom Brady? You know, for all we know, you know, this may have been him saying, hey, I'm going to take 11 days while, you know, to completely avoid getting hurt. So I'm ready for the regular season because I don't really need this time anyway. And, you know, who knows, some rookie might come through the line and get a little aggressive and certainly don't need to do that in the preseason games. He wasn't going to play anyway. So, you know, we'll see where it goes. But still, no idea where Tom Brady was. And at this point, I don't think anybody really cares because he looks, you know, solid. And as long as he does, there won't be any questions. But, you know, if he at any point looks as though he's rusty, well, then obviously the questions will change.
Roger, I know we're going to talk the Georgia Bulldogs as well as the Falcons, as well as what's happening in the Atlanta area. So rather than go to the Atlanta Braves right off the bat, some of your thoughts about the Falcons quickly. We won't spend too much time on that until we get our second segment.
Yeah, because Fred Kalilva will be with us. And one thing, Don, we did want to mention real quick, Lee Thomas was 86. Former Phillies general manager, architect of the 93 NL champions, and unfortunately passed away. You did a lot of work with him, and we wanted to mention that.
Absolutely. Lee was a great guy and a general manager of the Philadelphia Phillies, and he and I worked together for so many years, and then, of course, later saw him even more down here in Baltimore when he was assistant general manager for the Baltimore Orioles until a few years ago, when the administration changed there. But a great baseball guy, came from St. Louis to Philadelphia, built the team in Philadelphia to a championship, as Roger said, in 1993. And so we certainly want to pass our best wishes on to his family. Lee was just a great, great guy. Go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Roy, a couple of surprises that the Eagles made. They got Chauncey Gardner-Johnson in a deal that I think is a steal for them, for the Eagles, with the Saints. And how about Ian Book being let go, and the Eagles signed him as their third quarterback? I mean, what is there, like a train that goes from New Orleans to Philadelphia? What it seems
like. Yeah, very well may be. You know, what happens this time of year? Is oftentimes, and in both of these cases, certainly Ian Book, I think, what you get is you have a group, a coaching staff more than likely, or a general manager possibly, who really liked that player coming out of the draft for whatever reason. And it's a guy that, you know, they say, hey, all of a sudden he's available. It's like, you know what, I don't see any reason why, you know, I don't see anything different about the guy than I did 3 years ago. Or 5 years ago, or a year ago. And you go out and get those guys. And that kind of movement happens a lot. Guys suddenly become available, and teams that really liked him in his draft year, just didn't have a chance to get him, decide, hey, that's a guy that we can, we believe we can get some development out of and might be able to help us in some way. So that's a lot of it. The other thing is, you know, you're kind of plugging holes. Where do you, you know, if you feel that you can do better, or you can bring in a guy who does something, one thing, a little bit better. It's one of the things that the Patriots have always been very good at this time of year, is kind of dispatching guys who don't quite fit what they need, or maybe they've got two or three of those guys already, and they can let this guy go even though he's got a decent name, because what they need is a player who's a little bit better of a run stopper, or a little bit better of a third down pass rusher, or a third down nickelback kind of guy. And that's usually what happens this time of year, because most of us can go through whatever the team it is that, you know, if we follow them closely enough, you can usually pick out the top 50 guys, you know, before training camp even starts and be pretty close. But the last two or three usually comes down to, you know, what can somebody do on special teams? You know, is there an opening somewhere? Third quarterbacks, you know, are kind of sometimes are practice squad guys as well. So, you know, again, they're interesting moves, but oftentimes it's just a matter of a coaching staff or somebody within the organization liking a guy that they didn't have a chance to have on their team once before, and they want to take advantage of the opportunity.
Roger, you and I talked earlier today. The New York Mets, the Atlanta Braves, and the Philadelphia Phillies all took it on the chin last night, so there was no changes in the American League East as far as the records are concerned, the differential between the teams going into the month of September. Your thoughts, first of all, about the Braves. Are you still looking for them to overtake the Mets?
Well, I think that they have a good opportunity. They're playing the Rockies tonight, and the Mets are playing the Dodgers. No score in the top of the third with DeGrom pitching, and I think they do. I think that probably even if they tie them up, I think it'll the Mets will probably, even if they win by one game. I mean, they won, so we'll just have to wait and see. It should be a great September if all goes like we expect.
Roy, we talk about that, and everybody's eyes on what's happening with the Rays down there, because they keep jumping from maybe two games back, three games back. They're right back in the hunt for the playoffs and the wild card. How about the Rays?
Yeah, you know, fairly solid as a wild card team right now, even though that's quite a race as well. You know, you got about six teams there vying for that, for those three spots. But suddenly the Rays, only seven games, I say only seven with a month to play, that's a lot. But still, they've cut some of the ground between them and the Yankees. The Yankees have obviously hit a bit of a slump of late. So anything is possible. Can the Braves catch the Mets? Sure they can. Can the Rays catch the Yankees? Not likely, but you never know. Let's see where we are 3 weeks from now. If they're suddenly within two games, well, something could happen. So everybody's going to go through a slump. It's possible the Mets could hit one at some point. They got some tough teams on the schedule here coming up. So teams obviously are going to be looked to play in spoilers. So you're right. It's going to be a really interesting and a lot of fun in this month of September, because even though the races aren't as tight in most of the divisions, that extra wild card spot makes it interesting. And just the fact that teams like the Rays and the Braves are in striking distance makes it interesting as well. And, of course, you got the AL Central, where that's pretty much still up for grabs. I don't think the White
Absolutely.
Sox can get there. But certainly Cleveland and Minnesota are kind of jockeying back and forth the position. The amazing thing is, and we haven't talked about this too much, is that how far out San Diego is from the Dodgers. It's just all that they've done. It's amazing how, they bring in Juan Soto, and it really doesn't make a difference. They bring in Josh Hader, and he just has, three or four of the worst games he's ever had. He's got like a 16-something ERA since he went to San Diego. Things have just kind of really backfired there, and, losing Tatis for the season hurts him. It's been really interesting what's happened in San Diego, because that's a team that I think a lot of people thought at the beginning of the year, that's a playoff team for sure. And they, still get there as a wild card, but boy, oh boy, they what a surprise for what kind of season they've had.
Well, what a surprise too. The Yankees had such an outstanding first half of the season, have died since the All-Star break, came back last night, but it dropped 18 of 30 games following the All-Star break, and trying to get themselves back in the right position, and also losing to players' injury, which hasn't helped at all. And so we'll see what happens there. And right now it's a real nice fight between Atlanta and the Mets. And as you said, they're playing right now in New York. A good game last night, 4-3. The Braves won it. Roger?
Well, it is going to be a dogfight, but I think, like you and I talked about earlier, when the Phillies, they've lost three in a row, and Monday night was just a disgrace. But only time will tell. The Philadelphia fans are hoping that this is not a repeat of as has been the case in the last several years, of the September swoon. And right now the Braves are up. They're playing at Truist Park. They're up over Colorado 2-0. So that's a good, but not a big crowd out there tonight. Roy, I did want to bring up something else because and we'll talk to Fred about it. The Falcons open up against the Saints. And what did you think of how do you think the Saints are going to do this year, with Sean gone and the changes and everything?
Yeah, it's really an interesting dynamic there for sure. That's to me, it's one of the more interesting teams to watch because I think the talent is there for that team to, you know, actually win the division. I think they're capable of doing it. But one thing that's going to have to happen, and just I'll speak from experience on this, is they are going to have to find a way to get leads and hold them. If Jameis Winston is behind, he will take chances. Most of them will be, you know, chances he shouldn't take. He'll try to do things and force plays, and that's when he gets into trouble. You know, when he's playing with a lead, he can be absolutely dynamic. And because he takes chances, he often brings his team back. You know, what happened in Tampa with Jameis Winston was that he was often playing from too far behind, didn't have a running game behind him. And then his defense couldn't hold on to leads late in the fourth quarter, even after he brought him back. I don't think he'll have those problems in New Orleans. I think he'll have a decent running attack to balance things out. And I think he's got a defense that can hold on to leads. So I think they're a nine to 10 win team, potentially. I don't think they go much past 10, maybe 11, but things are going to have to go right for them to do that. But they are in a division that favors them. I mean, I don't know that they can, if they split with Tampa, they're probably going to be happy. But, you know, they should be able to take a couple from Atlanta. They should be able to take a couple from Carolina. And, you know, the schedule is, you know, the rest of the schedule, you see how it works out. You know, the way it looks now, it could look a lot different come November. So, you know, I think they're capable. I think they're one of the more interesting teams to watch just because, again, Jameis Winston getting a shot to be the starting quarterback, no Sean Payton, no Drew Brees. You know, let's see where it goes.
Just a sidebar before we jump back, Roger, we never talked tennis on the program, but Serena's playing tonight, played on Monday night, and got away with a win, in the which not many people thought she was going to sneak in and get into this, at least the second round. But she's trailing right now 4-3, another 23,000 sellout at the stadium in New York. She's trailing 4-3 right now going into game number 8 and serving. So I'll just give you an update on that. Roger, going back to you again, and we're going to talk a little bit about college football, as I said, in the next segment. But with Fred, but at the same time, let's talk a little bit about college football because it opens up tomorrow night. Roger?
Tomorrow night at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and it'll be the Ducks of Oregon taking on the Dogs of the national champion University of Georgia. And I think we all agree that's a great match for the Chick-fil-A kickoff. In Atlanta, of course, one of the reasons is the College Football Hall of Fame is right there, so they can do a lot of things. Like they had the SEC Media Week was there, and just a spectacular place. But what's your assessment, Roy, about this opening game and maybe about what the SEC looks like to you?
Well, yeah, I love it as an opener because, you know, again, as you said, great matchup between Georgia and, you know, obviously one of the dominant teams in college football right now in Oregon, which a lot of people believe can you know, I mean, let's face it, that's, again, potentially one of the more dominant teams, certainly from out west, and always a good team to watch. And, you know, Florida's got a similar matchup, not quite as much of a marquee because Florida's not in the top 25 right now. Some people have them at 25 or close to it, but they're playing Utah on the opening Saturday of the weekend, so or opening Saturday of the season. So, you know, that's another interesting matchup, an SEC team against a team from out west, and Utah ranked 7th. So I like the Georgia-Oregon game. I think it's a great test for Georgia right off the bat. Florida's got a good test right off the bat. So does Utah, so does Oregon. I think we're in for a, you know, typically – one thing college football has been able to do is they've really come up with some really good opening weekend games that draw everybody's attention. You get to a point, you know, usually most teams want to start off with something, you know, what basically kind of constitutes a win, especially the major programs. They'll play some directional school from some small state, you know, with Tennessee or Louisiana or something like that. But more often than not now, we get the first weekend at least for usually the first couple. You get some really good matchups. And then it tends to be, sometimes it gets a little bit dull in October, but November it certainly picks up, no doubt about it. So anxious to see it get started.
Well, a lot of the big schools making changes, obviously a big plus. Lincoln Riley going from Oklahoma out to USC. They expect him to have a great year turnaround out there, maybe even win the Big 12 out there when it's all over, because he took his quarterback from Oklahoma right out there with him. But there are a host of others that are going to be big turnarounds as well. It's going to be interesting to see what Kelly can do at LSU. I was talking to Roger about this afternoon. They gave him a lot of accolades at North Carolina and talked about how well he had done there over 10 years, and he did. But he always had the benefit of his schedule, and he went 4-11 against teams either in the playoffs or were rated much higher than he was during the course of the season. They're not going to accept that at LSU. So, Roger, some of these coaches are making moves, but they better start to win.
Hey, listen, you're making a big move when you go into the SEC, and I don't know if any of us can predict in the next couple of years what we're going to see with these super conferences and players getting salaries. And just like you said, Don, the move from Oklahoma to USC, the quarterback, listen, coach goes, he takes his cast with him.
You get that one option to make the transfer without losing any time. And, of course, everybody that seems to want to move is taking advantage of it.
Hey, exactly.
Yeah. Most people are taking advantage of it, but there's still a couple of schools out there that are kind of going about it the old school way. And, I think, as Roger mentioned, there's a lot of changes in just the way college football, obviously the bigger conferences. What's going to happen, players being paid, the transfer portal. The whole really landscape of college football is changing, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how that affects teams. Can teams, as a result of the transfer portal in particular, can they suddenly go from being just, wannabes to potentially a playoff caliber team. So we got to wait and see how it works out, but those teams that have not embraced the transfer portal and some of those things, it's going to be interesting to see how they measure up now against teams, because most of the ones that are taking advantage are teams that have kind of been, left on the wayside a little bit. They're not the powers necessarily, but they're taking advantage of what they can do to get players that that make them better.
And the other thing is that Miami has brought back one of their more illustrious alumni to be the head coach there, and they have just not been in the picture, really, as far as a dominant team for almost 15 years now. And, of course, they're trying to make a move right there with Mario and see if he can do things that other coaches haven't been able to do.
Yeah, not only that, but, and Miami is just kind of reminiscent of the entire state. Let's face it, Florida's not in the top 25. Florida State's nowhere near it. Miami's not, it's a down period for the university, for the whole state of Florida in college football. When's the last time you could say that neither Florida, Florida State, nor Miami was really considered a national championship contender at the beginning of the year? Usually one of those teams, throughout the course of the last 30, 40 years of college football, one of those teams is usually in that conversation or has been. But right now they're not, so... Florida, not quite the hotbed for college football that it has been in the past. Maybe a little bit of it is because, obviously players are going to other places. Georgia's taken a lot. Alabama's taken a lot of them. But growing programs like UCF and USF have obviously hurt schools like Florida, Florida State, Miami, and they're going to have to work to get better.
Roger?
Yeah, hold on. I'm going to get Fred Tullio right now, okay?
Okay. Maybe you'd like to hang on for a few seconds, Roy, and have a question or two for Fred Tullio as well. And you mentioned that I say the same thing there. They've been trying to get the University of Texas. I keep looking at what they're going to do and who the recruits are and how they're going to do. And They got a lot of optimism right now at the University of Texas, but they have really struggled. And what you just pointed out in Florida, their biggest problem has been they've lost the best players in the Texas area as well, going out to other places. Where else, going to Texas A&M or going to Arkansas or whatever? So it's going to be interesting to see whether they can keep the home talent and also whether they can take the last of the Manning quarterbacks and make them as great as the other two were.
Yeah, definitely want to see how that shakes out as well. Anxious to see how he looks. And, yeah, there's you know, as always, college football, just there's always just a so many interesting, you know, storylines to follow throughout the course of the season, no matter who you root for. It's always fun. So looking forward for that.
Hey, Roy, I got a question for you. What do you think about this weekend's game with Notre Dame and Ohio State?
Well, again, it's just another example of a great matchup to start the season. Whoever loses that game is automatically, you know, down a little bit in what they believe is a quest for a national title. I mean, both of those teams believe they should be in the conversation for the playoffs, and obviously as a national championship contender, and one loss. We've seen it before. That could really affect the way you your chances of getting to the playoffs. So it's really a very important game for both of them. But you know what? I love the fact that they're going up against each other again. It's a great weekend to start the season. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a very tough, Frank, step for the new coach to come in, taking over for
sure.
Kelly, and now. You know, he's got great experience and got a great calling card. But, boy, oh, boy, to pick the first game out of your hat and have to take on Ohio State,
yeah,
that's pretty darn tough.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly. It's probably not what they expected, but, you know, a lot of these games are, you know, these battles like this are negotiated, you know, 6-7 years in advance, if not more. And, you know, when you change coaches, sometimes they inherit schedule that they wouldn't necessarily – want for themselves, but it's what they're stuck with.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
another comment, Frank?
No, I'm just going to say.
Go ahead. The one thing is that I noticed that when he decided to start against a team like that, is he went with the green jerseys, which was the first, if you remember, was the first of the of a coach that only lasted a year. So I hope going back to the green jersey does a lot better than, you know, because this kid seems to be a decent coach.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Roy, listen, have a great week, okay?
All right. Thanks
hopefully,
for having me, guys. I appreciate
we'll see.
It.
Take care, and we hope the green jerseys won't be a factor this year.
Yeah,
you never know.
Hope not.
Hey, with us is our good friend Fred Khalil, the sports director, CBS 46 in Atlanta. And Don Henderson, Frank, Carol, and I are happy, as always, Fred, to talk to you. And I guess tomorrow night you're going to be attending a pretty big game in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Yeah, it's going to be a huge game. I mean, what a way to kick off the season, huh? I mean,
yeah.
there's all kinds of things going on here in Atlanta. And, of course, oh, yeah, big game. I'm sorry, tomorrow. Today is Wednesday, right? So tomorrow's Thursday.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
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 That's the way the calendar usually runs, Fred.
Okay, yeah. Well, I just want to be sure because the big stuff, really, I mean, you know, you're talking college football, so there's a big one Saturday and a big one Monday, of course, in college football over there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But, yeah, yeah, tomorrow should be a big night. It's going to be interesting to watch. I'm interested to see what how they work out things and how the personnel shakes out. What do you think, Roger?
Well, you know, it will be. Don and I talked about this earlier, Fred. I think the Dogs are just going to be right up there challenging for the national championship, at least in the playoffs, okay, and the SEC. But, you know, Alabama is supposedly number one. I guess Ohio State's preseason number two. But I just think it is a great way to get the college football season underway, and you're right there in the shadows of the College Football Hall of Fame, and you know, the Chick-fil-A, the Peach Bowl have always done a great job. So
well, they've always
continues.
Done a great job. Oregon, yeah, I'm interested to see Oregon. Of course, Dan Lanning, the old defensive coordinator for Georgia, now coaching the University of Oregon. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how he comes at Kirby, because he knows, you know, he knows what they want to run and how they want to run it on both sides of the ball. So, I mean, that's going to be interesting to see how that happens. But I think Georgia is able to handle them personally. That's just my
opinion. I was going to ask you that exact question, because Oregon, during the course of the season, over the last two or maybe even 3 years, has been rated very, very highly and very questionable as to whether they should be in the Final Four, whether they should be in the playoffs, where they actually stand. And boy, he's putting his foot in some hot water to start off like this when they have so big expectations for Oregon to win.
You know, well, I don't know if he's got much of a choice. You know, I mean, I think that the, you know, the networks and the bowl games and everybody, they make up these matchups. So now you don't get to play, you know, three or four patches before you go play your conference schedule. You're playing a big-time opponent made for TV showcase. And, you know, and so you got to find out what you got early on, you know. And really, I mean, it's good for either team, because I think if Oregon loses, I don't think they fall, you know, to the bottom. But, I mean, they're going to fall, and it'll be tough for them to get back into the playoff. But I don't think they fall to the very bottom. I don't think they're out of everything if they lose. It depends on how they lose, you know.
Well, that's right. Go ahead. I agree with you, Roger. Fred. How they lose, okay?
Yeah.
If they lose, how they lose. You know, we wanted to talk about the Falcons and training camps over. Their first game is a week from Sunday against the Saints. And I mentioned earlier, the Saints, I thought that they gave away, you know, the Chauncey Gardner. Williams, I think it, the Eagles got him for I thought a song and a dance, and then the kid that was the Notre Dame, had been at Notre Dame, that was their backup quarterback with the Saints and started that game last year for them. Book. I mean, the Eagles got him. I mean, what do you think about the number one? What do you think about the Saints? But mainly, what do you think about that matchup? How is Mariota during training camp, and do you think he'll be able to do a good job for the Falcons?
I think so. I mean, I think he knows Arthur Smith's offense. You know, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, let's face it. That's why Arthur Smith, you know, was able to cut the cord with Matt Ryan. I mean, is Marcus Mariota, in my opinion, as good as Matt Ryan? No, I don't think so at all.
Right.
But he knows Arthur Smith's system, and he can run Arthur Smith's offense. And he can make it happen. And look, you know, the Falcons are in a rebuild. I don't care what they tell you. I don't care what they say. You know, they're rebuilding this thing, and they're hoping to make it, you know, sooner rather than later. But, you know, there's a lot of work to do. So, you know, I think that's where it goes. Marcus Mariota knows Arthur Smith. Arthur Smith knows Marcus Mariota, you know, and they're able to work together and try to piece something together for this season.
Well, you signed a 2-year contract, right, Fred?
Right. Yeah.
And so do you think that they will be drafting the next quarterback in this next draft?
You know, well, they like Desmond Ridder. I think Desmond, it depends on Desmond Ridder. I mean, they really like him. They think they fold him in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and think about this. You go back, you remember a guy named Chris Chandler, right? He was, you know, he led the Falcons to the Super Bowl.
That's right.
And, you know, he was a third round pick, you know, and he went to the Colts and worked his way back in, third-round pick out of Washington, and came down with the Falcons and, you know, Dan Reeves. They were able to put something together and made a nice run. You know, I think that's the type of – I don't want to say it's the type of quarterback because they're not similar, but that's the type of situation that they have with Desmond Ridder, you know. Maybe one
right,
high
just
today,
yeah, sidebar, I've just been updating during the course of the program. Right now – Serena Williams is tied at 5-5. They got a 5-5 tie. She had a chance to win the set at 5-4. Did not do so. Went 5-5. And so now it's 30-30 in game number one after the 5-5. So she's putting on quite a show, much more than people thought at the tennis arena at the U.S. Open. Let's get back, Fred, to you now. Let's get back to you, Fred. How do you? I know you like the dogs, but how do you rate right now? What do you think of the SEC? Where there's so many great teams, how do you look at it?
Well, I mean, I don't know how you don't go with Alabama and Georgia again. I mean, I don't know who's going to beat them. I really don't. You know, as I watch those guys play.
How about A&M?
Well, you know what? I mean, A&M's got to go through Tuscaloosa. I mean, that's, you know, they got to go through Alabama, you know, and jump
right.
mouth and off. You know, you don't think Nick Saban's going to be ready for that one?
Yeah,
so,
right.
I mean,
after last year, right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's,
no
that's,
doubt.
You know, A&M's good, and I just don't think they win the West, though. I really don't. You know, I mean, it's going to be hard to beat either one of those two teams, you know, because Kirby's really taken the Alabama model, you know, the big, big lineman, you know, pounding the ball, we're able to run the ball, great defense, and he's able to kind of emulate that a little bit at Georgia, and that's kind of helped them, I think.
Jordan Davis.
Roger.
Jordan Davis.
Oh, my
okay.
gosh, yeah.
Say
that
no more
man,
about that line, right?
That's exactly right. Those big linemen, man. And they got, you know, four or five, six of them coming at you.
Amazing. You know, I wanted to switch over. We were talking about the Mets and the Braves earlier. Fred, do you think the Braves can get past the Mets before the end of the season?
I don't know if they can, you know, make a run and win the division again. I mean, certainly we've seen in Atlanta, we've seen that happen before.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, they're so far ahead of the wild card. I mean, it looks as though they're going to get in the tournament or the playoffs, whatever you want to call it, no matter what. And once they get in there, I think in baseball more than any sport, if you're hot when you get in, it's hard to stop you.
That's
no
a 2-0 lead right now in the bottom of the fourth inning, playing at Citi Field in New York. And it's been interesting. They got DeGrom going for him tonight, which is always a big step. And but at the same time, great game last night, 4-3. Even though the Braves won, it leaves 11 runners on base in scoring position. A surprise for the Braves. But tonight it's 2-0 Mets right now in the bottom of the fourth inning. But
and it's
2-0 Roger.
Braves, Don. 2-0 Braves too against the Rockies at Truist Park. The I wanted to get back to the Falcons. You know, you're right about Mariota. You know what's funny about him was when he came out of Oregon, you know, with Chip Kelly and Kelly went to Philadelphia, everybody thought, and it was a well-known fact, Chip wanted him. And Tennessee got him, right? Before the Eagles.
Right, yeah.
And just think how things would change. The other thing is, when you mentioned Matt Ryan, well, you and I were there when Matt started his career. And that was a great era for the Falcons with Mike Smith. And I love Mike Smith. I thought he was great. Coach, person. And I just hope that Matt has a great season with the Colts. Don't you?
Me too. No doubt. Class act. Great guy. Good citizen. You know, good contributor to the community. And a good, really I've never seen a guy take so much crap for winning so many games, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I really haven't. I mean, it's like, what do you want from the guy, you know?
Fred,
you're
let me
exactly
ask you this.
Right.
I always look back at Archie Manning. He's got three boys, and none of them went to LSU. You know, it's a little bit of a surprise that his youngest son went to Texas. I don't know how they decide out there, whether he helps them decide where they're going to go or what he does, but he's got three boys. They're all going to be national heroes, and they're all at different schools.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how they pick it, but, you know, Eli went to Ole Miss. He followed in his dad's footsteps. And
right.
Peyton, of course, went to Tennessee. And I think, you know, I think there was some
Cooper. Yeah, he got hurt.
Cooper got hurt. And then I think Phil Fulmer and the Manning family, and David Cutcliffe was his offensive coordinator, and they were real close to the Manning family. So I think that's how they ended up getting Peyton down there. And then Cutcliffe, didn't he go to Ole Miss, and then how they got Eli at Ole Miss? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know the whole story, but that seems like, as I recall, my memory's no good. But
well, hey, listen, we're getting older. But the other thing is, has Arch Cooper's son made a decision? I don't know if either one of you have heard. I mean, he's the number one ranked quarterback in high school football, I believe.
He is. Yeah, Arch Manning, right. I'm interested to see where he ends up for sure. I wonder if, you know, certainly Alabama probably would be right there.
I think he visited Georgia, didn't he, Fred?
He did. He did visit Georgia, right.
I thought so, yeah. Yeah, wouldn't that be something if he winds up as a dog? I'll tell you. I was over there last week with a friend of mine, and I'll tell you, every time I go in that Athletic Association building and see that Hall of Fame, I mean, there's just something about it that just picks you up. And anyway, we asked Tony, the receptionist, where the national championship trophy is, and it's in the football complex. It's not in the Hall of Fame and the museum there in the Athletic Association. But what a great year. And then, you know, you had the Braves, you had the Dogs, and it may be a repeat this year. And I know how busy you are.
Yeah.
When they're in the playoffs.
You know what I mean? And you know, the playoffs are coming. I think we got a playoff game here in Atlanta, one of them. And then I think in a couple of years, the championship game comes back.
The championship game, yeah.
You're going to be right in the heart of the action, Fred.
Oh, man, we've been there. Gee whiz. No doubt about it. Last year was incredible. It was an incredible year, you know. So with the
you had late
Georgia
night,
to the Braves, or the Braves right into Georgia. And then Arch Manning's going to Texas, so we'll see how that works out. But I believe he's committed to Texas. Yeah,
well, there you go, Don. Your alma mater got Arch Manning.
Yeah, that's what I said. They all went to different schools,
said,
and the youngest one decided to go to Texas, which surprised me. I mean, I would have thought if the old man was steering everybody, he certainly steered them all to different schools.
Yeah. Well, I think he let him make the choice, you know.
Yeah, well, Don played baseball at Texas, Fred. So that's
great,
why I say, well, you got to be happy.
Yeah.
So,
no doubt.
I'll tell you, it's going to be a lot of fun down. It's going to be a lot of fun down the home stretch with, you know, what's going on. Not only just the battle, but you pointed out, Fred, and I think correctly so. It really doesn't matter whether the Braves or the Philly or the Mets win, because it's all the playoffs anyway. I mean, you got to win there, and the advantage Mets have is that they've got Scherzer. They also, you know, have LeGrom if he can continue to pitch like he's pitching right now. And if you have two pitchers like that, you got a decided advantage. But I'll tell you, those two teams seem to me to be by far the best in the National League. I like the Cardinals. Overall, they're a good team, but I don't think they're going to match up with the Mets or the Dodgers.
Well, sitting in a series, if you got two or three good pitchers, then, you know, even the Braves were able to piece it together last year.
Right.
You know, Brian Snitker, I thought, did a great job of piecing everything together. But,
and
you
a
know,
great job out of the bullpen. Their bullpen was
that's
sensational.
What I mean. Yeah, because they pieced it. Yeah, they did a great job. There's no doubt about that. I agree with you.
And a great manager.
Yeah,
and
Brian,
you know,
Fisher, no doubt.
There's no. I'll tell you, when he got the job, I just thought, you know, justice prevailed, Frank.
Right.
I mean, Fred and Frank and Don. I really did, and you know, I know Don and Frank. You don't get to see, you know, the Braves like we do, but just to see his just the way he manages a game. You know, I mean, they were complaining about Joe Girardi in Philly about, you know, with his binder. I don't see Brian Snitker with anything. He's just there taking everything in, isn't he? Fred,
well,
I
mean, he might have, he's got people there with him, though. He's got his bench coach.
Oh, sure.
He knows what's going on. I mean, he's like, and let's not forget, you know, he got to sit next to Bobby Cox for a long time.
That's true. Yeah, yeah,
you know,
that's
very
true.
He's a lot like Bobby, you know.
Well,
yeah.
Fred, thank you very, very much for spending this much time
with
us.
Thanks for having me on, guys. I
hope that
you
and Roger will get together, and you'll get together on the show with us again down the line as we get into a few games into the regular season and as we look forward to the Major League Baseball playoffs because, as I said, you're going to be right in the heart of the action between the Dogs and the Braves. You're going to be right there.
It's like last year, man. We didn't stop working until the middle of January.
I know. Well, good.
Thank you very much, Fred. We really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Take care, Fred, as always.
All right.
Thanks
so much.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Mike Schulte on the line with us next. And Mike, of course, has joined us many, many times and has been the director of communications down there in Tampa, Florida, for one of the great bowl games. And I think the newest name, and I Frank put this down today, but I'm not sure it's the right name. It's not RealQuest, is it? RealQuest Auto Bowl? That's not the name of it, is it?
No, ReliaQuest.
ReliaQuest is the new name of the bowl. And Mike's been been the great man down there for over 30 years. And, boy, we talked the last half hour about college football and just talked to Fred in Atlanta where the SEC is the name of the day where they won the national championship. And I'll tell you, you can't wait. You can't wait for the college season to get started.
Yeah, that is true. I'll tell you, we're very excited. I mean, obviously, it started this past weekend, but gosh, it's been a it seems like a long summer. I mean, it just you're really anxious to get it kicked off, and we're glad that it's here on us, and we're able to watch some great college football.
Roger,
what do you think about that matchup tomorrow night at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium? You know, the Georgia Bulldogs against the Oregon Ducks, Mike.
It's on Saturday. Yeah, that's going to be a really good one. I tell you what, it's that's a good way to start. I mean, it really is. I mean, it's a nice way to have. I mean, there's some really fun games this weekend to start out. I think Notre Dame and Ohio State playing, and you've got FSU and LSU playing in New Orleans. So a lot of good big games to start off the season, or full week of the season, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, there's a lot of question marks out there on what some of these teams are going to look like this year with all the different movements of players and so forth. So I'm just happy that it's here, and we're very excited to start watching the games.
How about Chip Kelly? How do you think he's going to do going from the frying pan at Notre Dame where you had to win, but the schedule was a little bit favorable for him? But now he's at a place where you really have to win. LSU, they don't accept too many losses down there. How do you think that transition will go?
Well, you know, he's proven himself as a really good coach, and I think it's going to be, obviously a huge challenge. I mean, he's not only playing in the SEC, he's playing in the SEC West. I'm not sure if he realized that when he took the job. But no, I mean, that's...
He realized the money. He didn't worry about where he was going to play. He just worried about the money.
That's a tough division. That division is about as tough as a lot of conferences out there. So it's, but you know what? Hey, it's like they say, right? You want to beat the best, you got to play the best, right? And if you want to be the best, then you got to be, playing against the best, and you got to be able to be in a place where you can recruit the best. And he's gonna see what SEC football is about, and on a regular basis, and he's gonna, we'll see what happens. I mean, he's a proven coach. I mean, so he's got obviously a lot on his plate, but I think he's probably going to do well there. The LSU's got as much support behind their program as any other major program out there. So he'll have the ability to have the talent that he needs to put together winning teams. It's just a matter of how he can do against the competition in the league.
Roger?
Go
ahead, Frank. No,
he never did very well when he played against SEC teams. Do you think that's going to be able to be a hindrance to him? I mean, Alabama, for God's sakes, creamed him a couple times.
Well, it just all depends. I mean, if he can throw right guys, and mm-hmm. I mean, it's tough for everybody, in that league. Like I said, he's proven himself. He's a good coach. I mean, he gets the right guys in there, and he knows what he's going to know what to do with them. I mean, all these games are tough. These games inside the SEC. I mean, it's like Georgia loses to Alabama in the SEC championship game, then beats them in the national championship game. So they got the trophy mm-hmm. that really counted, right? I mean, you know, you flip-flop it, and then, you know, and then Alabama's the champion. You know, it's just like these guys, you know, beat up on each other. And sometimes it just comes down to, you know, a turnover here or there, or, you know, a missed officials call, or maybe just the luck mm-hmm. of the bounce of the ball, you know, in the, mm-hmm. in this league with among these quality teams. And, you know, but that's football. And, you know, so sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. But, you know, he's going to have every opportunity to do what he wants to do at that program. They've got, like I said, tremendous support. They get great athletes in there. But, you know, they're obviously, like you said, every week they're going to be going up against these, you know, quality mm-hmm. teams. And, you know, it's not going to be easy. But, you know, if you want to go down as being one of the top coaches, then – you know, probably mm-hmm. probably important to play in one of the, you know, the top league, at least one of the top leagues in the country to prove yourself and to show how good you are. So, you know, he wasn't in the Big Ten before. He was an independent, you know, the Notre Dame. So, you know, he has an opportunity to play, you know, certainly arguably in one of the top two leagues in the country, if not the top league
right.
on a regular mm-hmm. basis. So, like I said, he's got an opportunity now to really show what he can do as a coach. And I think,
Mike Schulte,
you know,
our special guest,
anybody like
that. We're
step
talking
up
college
to
football,
that.
Obviously, and we'll continue for this segment because there's so many great things to talk about college football. Also give you an update on the United States Open in New York. Serena won the first set, 7-6, and they're playing in the second set at this particular moment. Roger?
Mike, we talked about it, Mike and Fred and Frank and I, previous to you coming on, about Arch Manning, Cooper's son, number one high school recruit, the quarterback, I believe, and he made the rounds. He was over here in Athens to visit Georgia among many schools. And, of course, his uncles both played in the SEC, but he went to Texas and really, you know, a little out of the area. Would a move like that coming from the Mannings surprise you, or does that really send a message about Texas is all serious about going for a national championship in the next few years?
Well, I mean, I think everybody would have liked to have him. You know, certainly Texas wanted him as well. You know, it comes down to his, you know, his decision. You know, the kid and his parents, I guess. You know, I think they probably, you know, they obviously feel like that's the best situation for him. You know, I will say this, just, you know, my personal observation is that, you know, there's a lot of kids can play in a lot of places. You know, when they're, you know, at that level. But the ideal situation is to make sure you're going to a program where you fit in the best. And it could be the style of offense that they run, if obviously you're the quarterback, or it could be the coach. It could be the team around you. You know, there's a lot of different factors. You know, I've seen, put it this way, I've seen a lot of athletes that could have been, you know, even better or played in college that maybe didn't get much playing time or could have been stars in college, but they went to the wrong place. Not, you know, just, you know, they didn't know it, but they happened to be in a program that they ended up having to sit behind a couple, you know, guys and never got a chance, or they, you know, they had a coach that didn't really connect with what they, you know, their style of play. I read Kirk Herbstreit's book. If you haven't read it, you should read it. It's a great, look back at his life and his career. And he talked about how, you know, growing up in, you know, in the shadows of Ohio State as the son of a star football player at Ohio State. And, you know, he signed, you know, with Ohio State, even though Michigan wanted him. And, you know, and Bo wanted him up at Michigan. But when he went in that first year, they had made a change in coaching. Earl Bruce had left. Was sort of run out of there, and controversial with the fans running him out, but they fired Bruce, and John Cooper came in, and nothing against John Cooper, but John Cooper came in with a completely different scheme of offense. And Kirk Herbstreit was an option quarterback. You know, they ran a triple option in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he comes up there and he said the first week in preseason practice, he realized that he was at the wrong place from the standpoint of the coach, you know, and what he wanted to run there. And he never really, you know, did much there. And that, because he was in the wrong situation. He was in the wrong scheme, you know. And, you know,
well,
so
Mike,
if he had,
Mike, let
if
me interrupt
he
for
had
a second
gone somewhere
because
else.
God bless the portal.
Yeah.
Because these guys are getting an additional chance now when something like that happens, and they think they are in the wrong spot, they can make a change without losing the year. And boy, oh boy, look at the last 2 years and the teams that have taken advantage of the portal.
Well, absolutely. And I was going to say, so they do have that now, which helps a lot. So, you know, hey, I mean, but like I said, you're talking about, like, you know, choosing where to go. I mean, there's a lot of different reasons you choose a place, but, you know, ideally you want to choose a place that's the right fit for you. So, you know, you don't just necessarily choose, you know, based on what the logo is on the program or the uniform. So, and you're right, the portal is a huge a wild card now. That's why going into this season, you know, we sit there and look back and say, well, you got these preseason polls and all this, and based off of what they did last year, there's a lot of schools that have a lot of changes, not only in who they recruited and signed this offseason, but the portal, because not only did they maybe bring in some transfers from other programs that can play right away that can really help them, but they might have lost some of their good players from last year that went somewhere else, and they don't have those now. Now they got to backfill those spots. So it's really going to be interesting, I think, from here on. You know, the first few weeks of the season is really going to be much more telling as to how good programs are this year, because, you know, you don't have the old situation where all you're looking at is, well, what did they add from the freshman, you know, class kind of thing. It's not like that anymore. You got to look at who did they lose, who they had that they had, as well as who did they bring in from another program that can step in right away and help them. And one of
the perfect examples
year,
of that is USC.
They
also took one of the top two quarterbacks in college football all in one jump.
Yeah. Well, right. And our one of our teams last year, Arkansas, they had a number of players that came in and really helped springboard them to a level that nobody expected them to be at that quickly after the coach's second year. This past year, I know, you know, Rattler, one of the quarterbacks at Oklahoma, right? He goes to South Carolina. Well, that might be the spark that, you know, one of the pieces of the puzzle that South Carolina needed to be to elevate themselves a lot quicker than people would have thought they would have elevated themselves, right? So there's going to be interesting developments here in the first few weeks of the season. We're going to really be able to see, like, who really helped themselves in the off season, and you're going to have a lot of programs each year that make a step forward a lot quicker than what they used to be. It used to be, you know, you take maybe 2 or 3 years to get out of the hole, and now you can rectify a lot of things in one good year of bringing in some guys out of the portal.
Roger.
Mike, that point you made about Kirk Herbstreit was a great one, because I can remember when J-Bo Shaw came out of high school and he went to Tech, and then Tech got the former Navy coach, who's now retired, you know, from Tech, who ran that, you know, was it a triple option or something, you know, was unusual. And it was not J-Bo's style, but he did stay for 2 years, and he played, and then he transferred to Georgia Southern and had a very good career, and he's coaching now. But you're exactly right. I mean, a lot of times it's just you make a coaching change, and it can change the play of the quarterback immensely.
Just an update, Serena's down low 3 in the second set right now. She won the first set 7-6. She's down low 3 in set number 2, and they're getting ready for game number 4. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was just going to agree. Yeah, I mean, I worked in college basketball a lot when I was in college, and I remember we had a couple of kids in South Florida who got drafted by the NBA, and one of our best players, you know, he was a guard, and he got drafted. I want to say by San Antonio or somebody. I can't remember who it was, but it was sort of like, you know, he never made it because, you know, they drafted a couple other really good guards, and they had like an all-star guard. I can't remember the guy's name, but you know, it was sort of like, you know, we're like, oh, okay, well, he got drafted, but he went to the wrong team. He's never going to get his stuff. You know, he never did kind of thing. He played in Europe and all, but you know, that you see that all the time. It's like, you know, it's like, well, you know, that's not really the program. You want to go to a program who needs a good guard. You've got an opportunity for you to come play. I have a friend of ours, one of our best friend's sons is playing in the major leagues, but he sort of broke in through with the Braves actually back a few years back when they were really not very good at all. And they were retooling everything. Well, he got a chance to play with them because they weren't very good. And he was able to come in and show what he could do. And he was able to earn the spot, and he went on to continue playing for a few years here, but you know, it's, if they were a really good team and they brought him in there, he never would have gotten out of the AAA with that club unless they trade him because they didn't have a spot for him. So, you know, sometimes it's just, you know, you got to be in the right situation to be able to go out and prove yourself and show what you can do. But there's a lot of good players out there in a lot of these sports, professional sports especially, who get buried and never really get to see what they can do because they're playing behind other guys or they're really good too, or they're just in the wrong scheme maybe, like Kirk Herbstreit was. So you know, that's one that, again, going back to the portal, that is a good thing about the portal, is that now you got guys that, you know, these be maybe stacked up sitting on the bench, you know, Alabamas and Georgias of the world, who, you know, they got two or three guys, you know, maybe four guys deep on their bench who could be starters someplace, but they're playing behind somebody waiting for their turn. And that happened with Justin Fields. Justin Fields was the third quarterback on that team. And then the first guy got hurt, and Jake Fromm, he was also a freshman at the time, well, he ended up taking over, you know, the starting role, and he ended up, you know, starting next for the next 3 years or whatever. So Justin Fields leaves because he knows he's not going to get a sniff. And he goes to Ohio State and he goes to the national championship game. So, you know, but had he not, and that was before the portal, but had he not been able to transfer and play up at Ohio State, he would have been sitting on the bench for 3 years. We might have seen him 1 year maybe. So, you know, that's a good thing about this portal, is being able to have these guys, you know, that are stacked up sitting on the bench behind all the other big guys at these, you know, at the Alabamas and the LSUs and Ohio States and Georgias and stuff. They, you know, once they see, you know, where they fit in everything and, you know, where they sit on the depth chart, they can now go someplace else and say, okay, hey, you know what, I'll go to South Carolina and start, and I can show what I can do, you know, and that kind of stuff, or you know, Arkansas or someplace like that. So that's a good thing that these kids are being able to give at least one chance to transfer without sitting out.
Roger, before I go back to you, the Dodger game is now 2-1 in favor of the New York Mets. DeGrom is still pitching. Home run by Mookie Betts made it 2-1. Freeman hit a line drive up to the middle. He's on second base after stealing second. There's two outs. They're in the top of the sixth inning, and the Mets are leading it by a score of 2-1. Roger, go to it.
And the Braves are still up 2-0 over the Colorado Rockies. You know that the quarterback at Georgia, Mike, that started last year, and you know, and then Bennett took over. That he transferred with the portal, and I forget where he went. You may be, you may know, or you know,
Daniels.
I remember seeing. Yeah, Daniels.
I can't recall exactly, but yeah. Well, and you know what? Here, Georgia. I mean, the good thing for Georgia last year is they had two guys that they could go to. If Bennett had gotten hurt at any point, they had another guy with experience there that could step right in, and you know, they wouldn't miss a beat. So that was a nice thing, a nice thing for them to have, for sure. But
Mike,
but
with all
right.
this
I mean,
conversation
you know,
about college
that,
football
like,
and all these great teams, it's going to make
eat.
A great opportunity for you and your bowl to get great teams to come into Tampa and play in the bowl. So it's all to the advantage of everybody in Tampa to see great teams. The bottom of the sixth inning now.
Well,
DeGrom got
well,
the last
I'll
out.
2-1 you know,
bottom
you know,
of the sixth in favor of the Mets. Go ahead.
So, well, I was going to say, yeah, the one good thing about all the stuff that's happened with the conferences and movements and teams and all that, you know, we're aligned with the Big Ten SEC primarily. And you know, you mentioned Texas, you know, and Oklahoma, you know, will be coming into the SEC. So
they're
teams that we might have in our game one day. And now you've got a situation where USC and UCLA are joining the Big Ten. So we might have those guys in our game sometime down the road here. So, you know, so we're in good shape. We're only getting more potential teams that we can get in our game here over the next few years. So
USC's already jumped from the middle of the pack to the top before they even started the season. So, Mike, thank you very much. Mike Schulte, as always, and we'll talk to you a couple of weeks down the path, and we'll be a week or two into college football, and you'll be looking at all the teams to see who's going to come in to play at your bowl in Tampa, Florida. Thank you very much, Mike.
Mike, have a great week. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate it. And it's and
your
and
new
Frank,
sponsor
you
is Visionary, Mike.
Yeah, ReliaQuest, and they are the management are very visionary.
Hey, Mike, before you go,
they are.
Do you have tickets on sale yet?
Great company.
Mike,
not yet.
Tickets on sale yet?
On sale in about a month. So. No, yeah, not yet. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll probably end around the end of October, probably. Yep.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Yeah, we're
as
really
always.
Excited about them. They're a great company based in Tampa, so we're very excited to have them involved, and they're very excited to be a part of college football and the bowl game.
Great.
Fantastic.
Mike Zimczak, you're next up, and you got a lot of things going on down there in that Washington D.C. area. So, how about the Commodores first? What do we think about them?
Well, you know, we're down to the 53-man roster. Of course, the big news, and I'm not sure whether it made it down to you guys, was that Brian Robinson, the rookie from Alabama and presumptive starting running back for the Commanders, was shot in the lower body during a robbery.
I did see that. Two lower body wounds, yes.
Yes. He was on 8th Street Northeast, which is kind of like a commercial area. I've been trying to figure out how to compare it. I guess the best comparison would be, think South Street. A lot of restaurants, bars. There's a Ben's Chili Bowl that happens to be on the corner. Either that he got shot or definitely on one of the corners of those blocks. Plus, it was they're like block parties. So, and it was 6 o'clock at night. So this was not a late night thing. He most likely went down there to get some food and hang out and be around people. And was approached by two kids who tried to either rob or carjack him. He managed to wrestle the gun away from one of them, but was shot twice in the lower body. Thankfully, he's doing well. He was released from the hospital on Wednesday and yesterday was back at the training facility. But there's no timeline for when we might see him back on the field. So,
Mike, part of our unbelievable world that we live in today.
Yeah,
sure
is. Just unfortunate that could have happened, and we wish him the best on a speedy recovery because he had really had a great preseason. The coaching staff was very high on him to the point where he supplanted Antonio Gibson as the presumptive starting running back, or
right.
I guess main running back for the Commanders. They liked how he ran. He was an instinctive runner. They liked how he didn't leave yards on the field. So they were very, very, very high on him and looking forward to what he might bring this summer. So, or this season. So we hope that he gets back on the field and resumes full health sooner rather than later. But yeah, you can imagine that has had impact. you know, as the roster's taking shape, they're pretty solid at wide receiver. They've had to make some interesting moves at tight end because of injury. Their only key, I think the thing that stands out most to me from the Commanders' 53-man roster was they're only keeping four linebackers. Cole Holcomb and Jamin Davis seem to be, I guess, the two starters. John Bostic, who was their leading tackler last year, was released by New Orleans, and they re-signed him after he was cut after yesterday. But a real interesting move for for a team that really struggled at that position last year to go really light. And when they found the most success was when they had Landon Collins playing what they called the Buffalo Nickel, this sort of hybrid safety linebacker position. But they opted not to re-sign him because he wanted to re-sign as a safety. They wanted to re-sign as a linebacker. I don't really care what position you call me as long as I get the money, but that was apparently an issue. He remains unsigned. They don't have that player, so it's going to be interesting to see how, for my money, they're a little bit light in the secondary in that linebacker.
Roger?
You know, getting back to that sad situation, Mike, with Robinson, I think they've been off, obviously, for a few days because they don't play until next weekend. This coming weekend, a weekend after Labor Day. But I think Tuesdays are usually the players' days off if they have a Sunday game anyway, you know, following a Sunday game. But it's good that it wasn't after hours, all this bad stuff. Here's a guy, unfortunately, just with a crowd in a nice, as you said, block party, you know, in a nice active area of Washington. And I remember like 13th Street used to be, you know, 30 years ago, and then it became all offices. And so I guess you have, like you said, South Street's a little bit further east, only five blocks away, and they're not that long blocks there. But it's a very sad, and you're right, Don. I mean, you can't be safe any place you go. And, and then you get the mayor of D.C., you know, wanted to defund the police and all this other stuff. But, I saw the union had a big celebration, Mike, because of undefeated at home. And they were getting a lot of accolades and congratulations from everybody, pretty much, well, soccer fans in Philadelphia.
Well, they're playing tonight. They still got a couple of home games left. Right now, they are up 2-1 over Atlanta United. And I think they have seven games left to play, but they're 3 points back. Played one more in the race for the Supporters Shield, but they are clear at the top of the Eastern Conference. In their last couple of games, they have a 7-0 and a 6-0 victory. So they're just looking real dangerous, and they just look to have scored another goal. It could come back because of a foul, but they just, as we're talking, look to have scored a third in front of the River End on a mistake and a poor play by the goalkeeper in the defense of Atlanta United. This is probably, Roger and Don, the best iteration of the Philadelphia Union that I can recall. They are so good defensively, buoyed by, all-time great MLS goalkeeper Andre Blake. Michael Ura and Julian Carranza, the lone signee, have just started scoring goals for fun. Everything just seems to be coming together for the Union at the right time, and they look like a team that's going to be very, 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 very tough to handle in the playoffs as they go in search of their first since they joined MLS.
Well, when you look at MLS right now, as you say, a couple of games to go, are you impressed with what's going on, or are you depressed with what's going on?
Actually, I think this is as competitive and as good a season as I have seen in the history of MLS. When I'm looking at the product on the field, it is really fun to watch. You have some very good teams. You have a lot of compelling storylines. I was watching a really important top two matchup in the Western Conference.
Right.
Friday night or Saturday, I think it was Friday night. And Austin FC, who were a team that I just didn't think, I didn't know what to think of. They're in their second year. They're a second-year expansion team. Their owner was the owner of the Columbus Crew. He had threatened to move the team, and in order to save the Columbus Crew, they gave him an expansion team in Austin. So he set that up, but they beat LAFC for nothing. And I was really watching this game, and I was thinking, like, the level was good. It was good to watch. The atmosphere was great. So as far as the product for the MLS this season, I think this has been the best season that I can recall. There's a lot of very, very competitive teams. Even as much as Atlanta has struggled, they're still going in. And I don't think it's because, like, the teams are just that bad. It's just it's a very competitive league. You have some really good teams, Austin FC, LAFC, the Galaxy, the Union, New York Red Bulls, Montreal. But, you know, other than those guys who have sort of separated themselves at the top, there's a lot of competition, and it's very, very good.
Roger, before I go back to you, Serena right now is down 1-5 and serving in set number two. She won set number one 7-6 in the United States Open in New York City. Roger, you're up.
Yeah, the Union United games on national TV on FS1, and there was just a collision. You probably saw it, Mike, and one of the Union players, or two of them, one went down, and the other one is having all kinds of problems getting off the field, and hopefully that won't have a influence on the play of the game, but there's still plenty of time left. But and Philadelphia, like you said, is up, and a big crowd there at the stadium down there in Chester, Mike.
It looks to be a completely sold-out game, which is great for a Wednesday evening in Chester. But, again, this is proof about what winning does. I don't care what
you got
say.
That right.
If you put a winning product on the field, if you put a good product on the field, you're going to get fans, and you're going to get them consistently. I don't care who you are, what the team is. People don't want to waste their time paying all the money and going out to watch a team get beat. And, you know, I'm sorry. We see that all over the place in this area. You know, the Commanders talk about their troubles drawing fans because they don't win. The Nationals aren't drawing right now because they don't win. The Baltimore Orioles weren't drawing because they weren't winning. Guess what? The O started winning. Guess what happened? The fans came back. So,
yeah.
Winning
and they
is
came
the
back and drove.
Thing. Because people want to see a team be good. We don't want to watch. Who wants to waste their time and their money going out and seeing bad teams play?
Not at these prices.
Nope. No, exactly.
So, you know, the Union have assembled their team. They've got their coach. You know, I had my questions about Jim Curtin earlier in his tenure, but he has been there so long now, I really think that you're going to need an excavation crew to get him out of that job. They like him. They've had a model of developing young players, you know, scouting well, buying on the margins. Kai Wagner, who's their left back, when he signed, I guess, 3-4 years ago, we talked about him briefly on the show. I didn't really know who he was. He came over from, like, the second division in Germany. He's a MLS All-Star left back. He's had, I think, 7 assists in his last 10 games. He's just amazing. And now they're getting big offers from all over the place to try and buy him. And if they get their price, they're going to, you know, sell the guy, let him go on, further his career, and reinvest the money in the team like they've been doing, and they found success doing it.
Good management. Good management,
yes,
at the top. And They've got a great youth program with camps and developmental. I mean, they really have done a really good job. I mean, they and so have the United. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But there's a big difference between AMB operate sports, which is Arthur Blank, you know, with everything he owns versus the owners of the Union, you know,
yes.
That were just dedicated soccer fans when they put everything together. I give them a lot of credit. I wanted to get back to you on the Commodores. Carson Wentz, expectations, were the fans happy, the coaches happy? Were you happy?
I think the coaches are satisfied. The fans are satisfied. They saw enough from him in the preseason to be okay with having him as the starting quarterback. And
we'll see what happens with him. We wish him the best of luck. This will be his third shot. We'll give him the best of luck. Howard Esker is waiting to join us. So, Mike, thank you very much for the Washington Report, and we'll get back to you next week.
Take care.
Have
a great week, Mike.
Y'all gentlemen, have a good one, and I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot.
Mike.
Take care.
Howard Esker, welcome to the show, and congratulations. I know this is another milestone on WIP in Philadelphia, and we'll get to the Eagles in a second, but that's a long, long time in one shot.
36 years. Congratulations, Howard.
Yeah, it was 35 last year, so it's a year later. Now it's 36.
your mathematics are improving.
Yeah, that's right. I can add from 35 to 36. So, yeah, it's a long time, but that's all right. As long as I'm still having fun, it's all good. It's all good.
You got
Tell
your
me about
help.
These
that's
Philadelphia Eagles
thing.
Because everybody had great anticipation. I was fortunate enough to see most of the games only on TV on WNBC Philadelphia, but the last exhibition game, even though it was an exhibition, wasn't very good.
Well, they played with their fourth and fifth string guys and players that won't even see the light of day in the NFL.
Right.
And Miami started out with their starters. So, and Eagles coach Nick Sirianni was told by the other coach, hey, listen, we're going to play our starters. He didn't care. He didn't want to play his starters. He didn't want to play most of the second team. You barely got the third team in there. You know, it wasn't a good game. It was over in the first 15 minutes, but they played with nobodies on top of nobodies on top of nobodies. So I don't think you can judge them by that. I don't think you're going to be able to tell how good the Eagles are or how bad or how good they aren't until you play a regular season game. It's just these preseason games are a waste of time.
Roger?
Well, Howard, the Philadelphia fans are happy. Rager is gone, traded to Minnesota. And I know your callers, I listen to them every week. The morning show, is everybody's happy tonight in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, I mean, you had to get rid of him. He's the fifth wide receiver who can't return, or he can return punts and kickoffs, but it's pathetic how bad he is at that part of it. So they had to get rid of him, and they tried. They wanted to get more than they did. I think in the end, you may only get a seventh round pick for him. So it doesn't matter. You just had to get him out of here because it just blocks up other people, and he would have never played in the he would have hardly played in a game.
Roger, we had Dick Vermeil along with us last week, and we talked about the upcoming schedule, and we break it down into 4-4, 4-4. And it looks to me like the Eagles with the schedule lineup has a great shot to get off to an awfully hot start those first four games.
Well, based on the numbers out there now, the Eagles will be favored in 8 of their first 9 games.
Right.
So, but somehow I don't think they're going to go 4-0. It looks too easy for them to go 4-0. It just looks too easy. It's not that easy. So somehow I don't know which game it's going to be.
I think one of the first two, I don't think they'll lose to Detroit. That would be pathetic, even though Detroit is hitting in training camp and the Eagles are not, and people are worried that
your morning host told us he was never going to lose at Detroit.
Well, but, you know, you can't go by what he said. He just other side. Sometimes you got to explain to him that it's, the field's only 100 yards long. It doesn't matter what he says. I think that the second game against Minnesota, it's the home opener, is going to be a really tough game for the Eagles.
Okay.
That's where I think there could be an issue, and that would be crazy because then they go on the road the next week, and then people would have to wait a month to get another home game, and that wouldn't sit well. So, because they're going to beat Detroit. I don't think it's going to be easy. I think it could be a tough one against Minnesota, although they'll be favored. They will win in Washington, and then they will win at home against Jacksonville. And then the first game that they will not be favored is in Arizona, and I'm not a fan of the Cardinals this year. I think the quarterback I thought would be better, but he's obviously all about himself, and that would concern me if I were the Arizona Cardinals.
Let me just update the Dodgers and Mets. They're in the bottom of the seventh inning. The Mets are leading 2-1, two outs in the bottom of the seventh inning, and DeGrom has just finished for the night. He's not going to pitch the eighth, so we'll see what happens there with the New York Mets. Roger?
Yeah, what did you think about the acquisition or the signing of the third quarterback now, the kid out of Notre Dame? Was it Book, right?
Irrelevant. And that's what I think. I think Reed Sinnott, who was put back on the practice squad, he's there, but he's not good enough. But here's the problem. If you're getting to a third-string quarterback, you are in deep trouble. You know,
most teams can't
– if you get to the back, you're in trouble. The backup quarterback, you probably plays a few games. If he has to play more than that, you're in trouble. If you get to the third-string quarterback, you might as well just forget it. So I'm not even worried about that signing. There were so many quarterbacks that were released for teams to cut down the 53-man. It didn't matter who it was because I don't know that quarterback will ever – if he sees the light of day in a game, then the Eagles are in trouble. So it really doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Howard Eskin, our special guest this segment of the program, is always one of the outstanding sportscasters in Philadelphia for so many years. We talked about it 37 years at WIP alone, but worked at many other stations as well, radio and television, so it's more than 37 years, to say the least. I've known Howard for an awfully long time. Right now at the United States Open in New York City, the sets were split. Serena Williams won the first set, 7-6, lost the second, and it's nothing in the third set. Roger?
Howard, when you think back on your long career, not only at WIP, but at WWDB, CAU, et cetera, and TV, 29-3, what was there one event that really
stayed? I made the circuit. The only one I haven't worked at. Channel 6. Yeah.
Right. But what is there one event and I'm not thinking of the World Series because you were at several of them, but one event that really stands out that had maybe the biggest effect on you as far as you were surprised that it was a happy time, because there has to be probably many of them, but one in particular.
Well, there were many moments, but the 1980 World Series Phillies were at the top of my list of a team covering. I went to all the games, home and away, and that was a team of Hall of Famers, real Hall of Famers, not the bogus Hall of Famers to get in the Baseball Hall of Fame now. You had Schmidt, Boa, who I think is a Hall of Famer. You had Carlton, Pete Rose, if he didn't foul things up, he's really a Hall of Famer. And I think Bob Boone was a Hall of Famer. But that was the team. But then when the Eagles won the Super Bowl in the 2017 season and the Super Bowl in 2018, being on the sidelines as a sideline reporter for our broadcast was a moment, a moments that I'll never forget. And
sure,
that's at the top list of me going and covering. And I've been to 40 Super Bowls, and some of them have been Eagles Super Bowls. But that's the only one that they won. And the fact that I was on the sidelines for that game was incredible for me. So that has to, without question, be at the top of the list.
Howard, does it the Houston Astros-Philly World Series also, especially the Nolan Ryan game, doesn't that stand on that late line too?
Well, yeah, that was the playoffs. That wasn't the World Series, but that was probably the most exciting, and that was the 80 season for the Phillies.
Right.
That was the most exciting playoff because it was only a 5-game series, and the fact that they beat Nolan Ryan when he never gets beat after the seventh inning with a lead, and I was there for that. It was really, really amazing, but there's nothing like being right there when everything's going on in a Super Bowl. That's the top of the list, but that's a good point. That Houston series, it wasn't the World Series. It wasn't a championship.
Right.
But that a great, great series. And if the Phillies hadn't lost to Toronto, that was an unbelievable end to a World Series in 1993 when Joe Carter hit the home run against Mitch Williams. I wouldn't say it's at the top of the moment because the team in Philadelphia lost, but it still has to be the Super Bowl. It still has to be the Super Bowl, although that Houston series was really, really exciting. Really exciting.
Roger?
Well, you know, we talked, as Don said, Howard, we talked to Dick Vermeil last week, and obviously I haven't been anywhere near what you've been to. I've been to 5 games but 13 weeks when we were doing shows. But I was at the one where the Rams won. And in my case, I was so happy for Dick. And I know you were there too. And and ironically, I was at their camp, at the Rams camp in the summer. And I had talked to him then. And then to be able to ask him a question after they won, I mean, to me, because of Dick Vermeil, that was probably the greatest moment I've had in being at a Super Bowl live, you know, when you're there, not just watching or whatever.
Yeah, obviously I had a relationship with Dick Vermeil, and he invited me to his induction, and I went a few weeks ago. And that
special,
was
special, right?
Yeah, it was special. It was a lot of fun, and obviously he appreciated the fact that I came. But it wasn't a Philadelphia team. It was a Philadelphia guy. But it wasn't a Philadelphia team. So that, for me, doesn't put it, although it was an exciting game to end on the 1-yard line, I just can't put that near the top of the list because
I said to him, Howard, I said to him, that field were 5 yards shorter, he wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
No, 2 yards shorter. If it was 2 yards shorter, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. And that, obviously, that got him into the Hall of Fame. That helped. That was a great game. Usually the Super Bowls aren't great games, but the Eagles Super Bowl, at one point, Roger Goodell told me when I saw him at the league meetings, said that might have been the best, that was like the year later, the best Super Bowl ever, that Eagles Super Bowl, because it was King Fourth. Hell, the Patriots had over 500, they had close to 600 yards of offense, and they lost the game. So you can imagine how good the Eagles were, and we know what Nick Foles did. So that was an amazing game, back and forth, and it was just action throughout, and it was unbelievable. So that still is really, really special for me.
Howard Eskin, our special guest, and I can't let the show end without talking a little bit about the NBA, because the NBA was such a fantastic sport, and now it's nothing. But I can never forget your dad. Your dad was always such a big part of the Philadelphia 76ers, and either back of the Warriors, the whole shebang, and you were a big basketball guy at that particular time. And I'll tell you, I can't watch the NBA anymore.
it's a broken product. It's really not fun to watch. You watch the first few minutes and then the last few minutes, and the rest of it's just back and forth. Dunks, three-point shots. The game's not played, as Larry Brown used to say. It's not played the right way. It's just not a good game anymore. The guys are talented, but that doesn't mean it's a good game. It is really, really hard to watch an entire game. It's just not players. Players worry more about themselves than they do about their team. I mean, Golden State's a special team because they care about each other. I don't know that there's a lot of other teams nowadays that care about each other.
Well, you'd like to hold your good friend Simmons up as an ideal guy for the NBA, wouldn't you?
Yeah. He kind of fooled a lot of people called him a generational player. He couldn't shoot. How could you play in the NBA and couldn't shoot? He was afraid.
He's going to make a lot of money for doing nothing.
Well, that's because the Sixers are stupid.
Right.
You know, they made a lot of mistakes. James Harden, Father Time, I think, is winning this battle with James Harden. He signed for less money. I don't believe that, but I don't believe he signed for less money. I think the money's coming from somewhere. But he's just not the same player as he used to be. Daryl Morey, as a president and general manager, is a fraud. The head coach is a nice guy, but he's not a good coach.
Those folks that aren't NBA fans, he's referring to.
Well, I call him Glenn Rivers. There's only one Doc in Philadelphia,
right.
And that's what's serving.
That's right.
But they'll never win a championship with that core of players. Never. It's just Embiid is the woe is me guy. He's very talented, but the game's not played at the center position anymore. You know, you have centers. Hey, it's great if a center can shoot. But I'd take the guy from Denver over Embiid because he plays every facet of the game well. One of the best passers in the NBA since Hakeem Olajuwon, but you don't find many of those guys anymore.
Very true.
Well, the one thing about the NBA was you're exactly right. The athletes are more athletic, have more ability, can jump higher, run faster, do everything better. Maybe not shoot better, but they can shoot as well or maybe a little bit better because they shoot everything from 3 points now. You can't tell. But the game stinks. I mean, you can't watch the game.
No, it's a broken product. It's not a good game to watch. And I don't know how fans – their ratings were down, too, for the finals. So I don't – and they're not going to be able to fix it because the players run the game. So it's not going to change.
Howard, Rogers. I wanted to ask you about the Phillies. I mean, the last three games have been disasters. And do you think that this is going to be like a repeat performance of the El Foldo?
I think they got to make the playoffs. Because I don't think the Brewers are too inconsistent. San Diego, up until the last few games, kind of packed it in after they found out about Tatis. But they're a better team. I think they're a better team than the Phillies, but it'll make the playoffs. But what are they going to do in the playoffs? I look at a team that has a chance to go places. And I love when people say, well, anything can happen. Yeah. And the cow can jump over the moon too. So anything can happen. they're a good team, but they're not a really good team. And
they're what they are. They're a middle of the pack team. That's what they are.
That's exactly what they are. And they just their lineup is inconsistent. They have some good players who aren't. Well, you know, Harper's a good player. Schwarber is Dave Kingman. You guys remember Dave Kingman? Home runner strikeout.
Yeah.
That's what most people don't remember. Dave Kingman, home runner strikeout. That's all. I don't know that. In today's game, if you hit a home run, you're okay, and you walk, you're okay. He's hitting 211. And people don't worry about batting averages anymore. Well, you have to figure it in there somewhere. But Schwarber's done, I guess, what they've expected from him. Castellanos is mailing it in. And JT.
He's done a little bit better the last 3 weeks, Howard.
Yeah, I know, but he's still okay.
Big bucks.
He,
Yeah, but he's also a mediocre right fielder. All the accolades that he got coming in and what he was going to do offensively, but even what he does, when you got Schwarber playing left field and you got him playing right field and center field, they had nobody for a while. I mean, you as he said, the worst fielding team in the National League.
Well, the problem was when Harper, and he won't play right field the rest of the year, he'll be a DH the rest of the year. When Harper DHs, that means both of those guys have to play when they play for the most part.
Right.
Who are going to put out there? So that created that problem. But that's not the way they looked at it. But yeah, he's a below average defensive right fielder. Schwarber's a below average defensive left fielder. The Phillies have a below average defensive infield, although it's better without that stiff D.D. Gregorius.
Center field isn't any better, Howard.
What's that?
Center field's no better.
No, it's not. Well, when you got the guy out there, Marsh, who can play center field, and that's about it. He had a home run last night when it was nothing. Like, who cares? It's just guys throwing ball right down the middle of the plate. But it's just they're not a good defensive team. JT Realmuto can throw out runners, but nobody steals anymore. So what difference does it make? You know, I don't even think people say, oh, he's the best catcher in baseball. No, he's not. He's not the best catcher. And he'll hit 270. He's going to have – I don't know that he'll have 18 home runs this year. It's just – he doesn't hit with power. It's just – they gave him too many years. It's okay if they sign him for 3, but they sign him for 5. So they have 3 more years after this. But, you know, it's just – they're good enough to make the playoffs, but that's about it.
You know what's interesting? You know, watching the Mets-Dodgers game, Darren Ruff was traded from San Francisco to the Mets. And I think about Darren Ruff, Howard, with the Phillies, when he was looked at as going to be a really big home run hitter. And didn't they move him to left field? Was that when Hoskins came up? Or was he already gone? Because I know he went to Japan to play, and then he came back, was San Francisco?
I think he was gone.
But I always liked him, as a player, and he seemed to be a good guy in the clubhouse. Was he like that, because you would see him quite a bit in his days with the Phillies?
Darren Ruff was a really good guy. I mean, a really good guy. Yes, he was. But they obviously had other people and other plans, and Dan Ruff turned into a nice player. I mean, I don't know that would have changed the things for the Phillies much, but he was a nice player. He did a nice job in San Francisco, but why did they trade him? I don't get it either.
Well, he played a lot of years overseas, don't forget, too, and by the way, they're in the bottom of the eighth inning right now, 2-8-0 for the Mets, 1-3-0 for the Dodgers, and the bottom of the eighth inning at Citi Field. And go ahead, Roger.
Yeah, Braves are up 3-0 in the bottom of the seventh. So it's going to be the Mets and the Braves down to the wire. You think the Braves can overtake the Mets, Howard?
I think it's kind of interesting. I think the Mets are a little bit better. I think the Mets and the Dodgers are the two best teams in the National League. But I don't know what the schedules are for both those teams. The Braves are a really good team, and the Mets are a really good team. The lineup of the pitching for the Mets is probably a little bit better, although the Braves are really good, but the Braves lineup is better. So it's I think they can overtake them. I don't think they will.
Roger, the Mets are a 1947 to 1955 team. They hit the ball to all fields. They move it around. They steal base once in a while. They hit a few home runs. They got good pitching. They're very interesting to watch. A great team to watch on television. Just the opposite of what the Philadelphia Phillies are.
Well, the Braves and the Mets have terrific managers. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they're stocked.
They've got great managers if you have players. I mean, don't forget he managed the ball for a long time. You got to have players.
Well, as Howard, you always say managers maybe make a difference in five, six games
five
a year, right?
why the managers are irrelevant for the most part. It's really the players. If you have good pitching, you can go to sleep for 6-7 innings, and then you're
right.
and now with the DH, you don't even have to make those decisions anymore.
That's true.
Connie Mack did 80% of the game, and we were talking the other. I forget who we were talking. It might have been Larry Bow. He said 90% now. Pitching's not 80%. 90% of the game. If you don't have anybody to pitch the next day, momentum doesn't mean anything.
That's correct.
Do you think the Flyers will be able to turn it around with Torch there as the coach?
Are the Flyers still in the NHL? I didn't know if they stopped down to the AHL.
Right.
the coaches, Tortorella, that's nice that they got him, but you can't make chicken salad out of you-know-what. And
right.
They're a bad, it's sad what's happened to that organization. Ed Snyder's turning over in his grave. It's sad. They are really, really bad.
Because we're out of time. Thank you so much for being with us. I tell you, it's always a lot of fun.
Howard,
you and I go way back, and I couldn't appreciate more that you took time to come on with us for so long. Thank you so much.
No problem. All right, have a great night.
Have a great week.
Thanks, Howard.
Howard, take care. God bless. All right. Congratulations.
All right,
that's it. We'll see you all next week. Thank you very much for your time. Frank, you're in control. Go to it.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please let them know they're there. They're trying to help you out. They're there for you. Not everybody is a bad guy. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcat, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Yaswitz, Sergeant Thomas Bager, San Diego Officer Mike Handler, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, Sergeant Tom Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Police Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant James O'Connor, Philadelphia Police Department, Sergeant Chris LeBake, Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department, Patrolman Anoffin Crispin, Lakeland PD, Lieutenant Joe Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Deputy Josh Meyer, Nassau County Sheriff's Department, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Trooper Joe Bullock, Florida Highway Patrol, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Chief Al Hogo, Longwood Key Police Department, and Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department. Although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, and sometime we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. May the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields with sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night, God bless, and have a great week.
Shema Ezahir Ma Son Hashem Nevorat Fet Hakuig Again Ma'er Ma fiery blade engaged to lead. He'd break the bravest in the field. Spirit and with mind aflame, saw ash and strength and length of days.
County Dispatch in 1999. County Dispatch in 1999. All units be advised, 1999 responded to his last emergency. And God rest his soul. Bob, we love you and we miss you.